On Maine Calling, the future of Maine's forest industry. The beginning of the 21st century was pretty bleak for Maine's forest products industry. Six paper mills closed, as well as other long-standing and well-respected wood products industry stalwarts, from sawmills to furniture makers. Many people believed it was the end of an era, but they may have been wrong. Maine's forest products industry is working hard to reinvent itself, and there are signs of renewal. Innovative products, including cross-laminated timber, wood fiber insulation, and composites used in 3D printing, are spurring investment and new companies, while traditional mills continue to operate. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Have you seen the photos of the full-size boat printed with a 3D printer at UMaine? That boat is 50% wood fiber. Is that the future? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The forest products industry has long played a vital role in the state's economy, but recent years have been tough. Today, we're going to learn about efforts to bolster and reinvent Maine's forest industries and how sustainability and climate change come into play. My guests today are Marina Bowie. She is the executive director of Bio-Based Maine. Shane O'Neill is Forest Industry Business Development Manager at the University of Maine. And Patrick Strock is Executive Director of the Maine Forest Products Council. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you hope for the future of Maine's forest industry? What ideas are you excited about? Which make you skeptical? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. And Pat, I'm going to start with you. What's at stake here?
What's at stake? Well, I think we have an industry that is one of the most important in the state of Maine. When we look at our natural resources, our fishing, farming, and forestry opportunities, forestry ranks right up there, and it's a way of life in the rural communities that are important to Maine. So we really think it's here to stay, and it's got a great opportunity. We just need to spend some more time thinking about it and developing it and putting together more of a strategic plan.
And the strategic plan that came out last year looks at diversifying.
Yeah.
This is not about lumber mills and pulp and paper, though those are part of the future.
Oh, they're a big part of it. What we're seeing, we had the closure of about five pulp mills along the Penobscot River. And then shortly after that, in the more recent years, the mills that have survived have been putting in capital improvements. But they're not making the same products they used to. They're diversifying. They're moving from printing paper to packaging. A tissue, like the Woodland Mills, labels that you see in products, and other kinds of pulp that might be used in textiles. So it's a new kind of diversification that we think is important from the existing mills that are here. And we're always going to need lumber. We've actually been building a couple more sawmills with maybe one more underway as well. So dimension lumber is going to continue to be important. But we don't want to get caught with being in mature industries without looking for the future. And Marina has some insight about what are the things we can do with trees that we never thought about before.
Sure. And we've done a Maine Calling program on the bioeconomy, which was so interesting. We were talking about everything from seaweed to, clamshells to, of course, wood products. Marina, why don't you talk to me? And I want to back up and say that as I was writing scripts for today's program, when I typed the word bioproduct in, my computer tried to correct me. So this is how new this whole concept is, that an idea of a bioproduct, a bio-based product is. Tell me what we're talking about. What kind of products are already in existence and what are in development?
Right. So when we talk about bio-based products, we talk about all matter of things that can be made from plants rather than petroleum and natural gas. Specifically, when the Forest Opportunity Roadmap Maine Group looks at, and Bio-Based Maine looks at bio-based products, we're talking about all matter of things that you can make from the components of wood. So specifically, we look at nanocellulose, which Shane can talk about at the University of Maine. We talk about sugars, which you can ferment sugars to make biofuels. You can also make textiles, like Pat said, from the components of wood. Other things that you can make protein and fish food from wood. You can make wood-based insulation. We're seeing GeoLab locate at the Madison Mill in Maine, where they'll make wood-based insulation. That's actually a commercialized technology in Europe, but it's new to the U.S. So these are some of the really exciting things that you can make from wood. And
okay, yeah. Well, Shane, tell us about nanocellulose. What is nanocellulose?
Sure. Nanocellulose is essentially what paper is made out of, but just on a much smaller scale. And when you actually get to that small of geometry, you actually have much different mechanical and chemical properties and performance. So it behaves very differently than, say, just a normal pulp wood.
Okay, so we've all seen, or many of us have seen, the pictures from the University of Maine of the 3D boat, the boat that came from a 3D printer, a 25. And I understand that that is 50% made from wood. Is that nanocellulose, or is that something else?
It can be both. They typically are using mixtures of bio-based polymers with nanocellulose and also natural wood. So it's kind of a mixture of the three.
What do you see, Shane, as the big product of the future, or is there not one big product of the future?
I think it's a family of products, because you want to fully utilize your resource. So as you process wood further down the chain, you have opportunities for new products such as cross-laminated timber, which is made from sawn dimensional lumber, but then the residuals from that process you can use in making other products such as the biofuels, bio-based polymers, and also the nanocellulose. So you have opportunities all along that process to have value-added products come out of the chain rather than just things that would be a waste product.
Yeah, I want to back up a little bit. I think a lot of us have heard about the cross-laminated timber. Is this something that looks like a board when it comes out? And what is the benefit of using this?
It looks like a really large, thick board. So if you think about how plywood is manufactured, it's layers of veneer facing in different axes to get mechanical stiffness and strength across the product. Now, if you take those veneers and replace those with dimensional lumber, you have a much thicker product, and that's essentially what cross-laminated timber is.
And that's being made in Maine today?
It's proposed to be made. There's an announcement of a facility in Lincoln.
It's a really interesting product, because it allows you to build multi-story buildings out of wood. And everybody's looking for those products that are eco-friendly and that can maybe replace, to some extent, steel and concrete. We'll never replace them completely. But these are the whole thought of growing your buildings is really popular when we look at the importance of wood.
Pat, I wanted to ask you, Marina mentioned the Four Main, which is a big initiative, lots of different organizations from the University of Maine to CEI to different corporations, the Maine Development Foundation, all of you coming together to come up with a strategy for growing Maine's forest products industry. I'm struck that the goal is really ambitious, growing the industry 40% in 6 years. It started last year. How are we doing on that ambitious plan?
We're actually doing well. If you take a look at the investments that have been made in Maine in the last 3 years, we added up to be over $1 billion of capital improvements and infrastructure investments in the state. So it's a really great opportunity. What we do to arrive at that figure is also look at the resource. What is the potential for the resource? And we have a lot of young stands that are growing online, a lot of spruce and fir coming in particular, that's going to allow us to fuel that kind of growth. It's interesting. We went from this group was formed out of concern about the industry and some of the mills that were closing. But those mills that survived have gotten stronger. We have more capital investment in Maine. And now we're in the same boat as a lot of industries looking for current and future people to work in our businesses and to help us with our night shifts and our logging capacity, which needs to grow as well.
Well, that was going to be my my big question here. One of the big questions is that, you know, if there's been a theme to the Maine Calling programs we've done about Maine's economy in the last 2 years, no matter if we're talking about tourism, whether we're talking about medicine, whether we're talking about education, the theme is the same, that there are not enough people to meet the goals or maybe even to sustain it. What are you all seeing in the forest products industry? How many more people do you need to go into them to grow? Grow it to this 40% goal in 6 years?
Well, we think there's a lot of it starts at a young age, really, making sure people understand that there are opportunities in this industry, that some of the declines we saw in earlier decades are changing, and that we've got a lot of growth opportunity in Maine. So it starts with an education program for people to see those opportunities and the training, investment in training, so that we have new kinds of opportunities for people. And it's, if you look at the logging industry, it's no longer chainsaws and skidders. It's $250,000 pieces of equipment that have very sophisticated circuitry and hydraulics. And we're asking more and more from loggers in terms of how to manage the harvest of the stand. And there's a lot of good work being done by professional logging contractors of Maine and others.
Do we have numbers? Do we have estimates of how many more people we need to be going into, or you all need to have going into this industry to meet the goal?
That's exactly what we're trying to do in phase two of our study, is find what are the needs, both in the mills. We're finding about 40% of our mill employees are going to reach retirement age in the next 10 years. So we've got a big hole to fill there with regard to jobs and mills. And that's everything from people with degrees in chemistry to on-the-floor workers and loggers working in these pieces of equipment, and foresters as well.
Marina, I understand there are countries in Europe that are ahead of Maine in this, Finland for one. What can we learn from them, and how can we use what they've done as a blueprint for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. So Maine actually really excitingly just signed an MOU with Finland. Governor Mills and the Finnish Prime Minister signed it in, I think it was October of this year.
A memorandum of understanding?
Yes, yeah. Sorry, yeah, a memorandum of understanding to grow our respective forest-based bioeconomies. Because Maine's forest resource and Finland's forest resource are so, so similar, we can learn a lot from them as to what they're doing. And in general, Scandinavia, there's a company, Stora Enso, that, you know, traditionally they use wood to fuel their operation, their mining operations, to mine copper ore and extract metal. And today, Stora Enso makes traditional wood products, paper and packaging, and more advanced materials such as tall oil and turpentine and biocomposites and specialty papers. So these companies, and Stora Enso actually refers to themselves now as a renewable materials company rather than a pulp and paper company. And this is one thing that Maine can do in the future, is as we develop for Maine and as we work to develop the forest economy in Maine, we can look to Finland and use their models of diversifying their forest products to do the same in Maine.
All right. Shane, tell me about the University of Maine's role in this. I understand, you know, we've followed the progress of the composites lab for over the years and all the products that have come out of that. How does UMaine determine what products might be feasible in the future, might be in high demand? How do you determine where to set your research goals, and what are you working on right now?
Well, there's always a balance of fundamental research, you know, things that may not reach a development or commercialization stage, but we're always looking at products that we can see a path to commercialization. We want to work on products that will not only, you know, meet the immediate research needs, but also that we can see a future for an end use. We don't want to just do research for research's sake. We want to support the state as a land-grant university, And so we're always looking at products and applications that can be developed with the technologies.
Mm. How much is the movement toward having things that are biodegradable, that won't stay in landfills forever, part of what you're thinking about as you're developing new products?
Well, it's definitely part of it. You know, there's different ways to look at things. You can look at what's recyclable, renewable, and also biodegradable and compostable. You know, you look at the issues with microplastics in the oceans. So if you can develop a biodegradable, bio-based plastic that if it did end up in an ocean, would break down very quickly rather than accumulate. So you look at what are the social issues, what are the environmental issues, and kind of focus on how can you make things better.
If we walked into one of the labs at UMaine, what would we see right now?
You would see millions of dollars in equipment and hundreds of researchers who are very focused on what they're doing.
All right. We're talking about the future of Maine's forest industry, and the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Pat, you've worked in this industry for a long time. Has it been hard for people who have been making traditional products for a really long time to get their heads around this sort of new world and this new way of thinking about wood products?
Yeah. I mean, if you were to look at my career, I have a couple of degrees in forestry from the University of Maine, and I've had to be flexible. I wanted to live in Maine, and I've been able to work as a forester in the field. I've managed trucking companies. I've managed project management teams. And now I'm a policy guy with the Maine Forest Products Council. And so it's been a wonderful career, but diversified. I think the industry has learned how to adapt and change. And that's really important going forward.
How quickly can this happen, this change?
We've seen investment at a dramatic pace with some of these mills. Once they find that they have a supply of wood, a sustainable supply, they've got the right workforce in place, investments are made pretty quickly. It's really been interesting to watch some of these new developments. GoLab is a real success story that's still in the making in the Madison Mill, but we've gone from a mill closing in that location to another tenant coming in and using a more modern product going forward.
And so, GoLabs is the company you were talking about to make the wood fiber insulation.
Yes. Innovative company. They started out really in the passive house movement, and they saw technology and materials available in Europe, and they wanted to have a supply on the East Coast. So they really have been making investments in that.
Well, we're talking about the future of Maine's forest products industry. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from WEX, providing global payment solutions for the fleet, travel, and health industries. Career opportunities at WEXINC.com. And New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
Next year's U.S. Census will be the first conducted mostly online. To make sure that doesn't lead to an undercount of communities of color, one organization in Georgia is setting up free Wi-Fi hotspots.
We have an opportunity to be counted and to show up. And if we don't, then we're losing money. We're also losing power in terms of influence and representation.
I'm Ari Shapiro. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon between 4 and 6:30, right here on Maine Public Radio.
After Black Friday and Cyber Monday, there's Giving Tuesday, an international day to give back. It's every year on the first Tuesday after Thanksgiving, and it offers a moment to pause and support the causes you care about. I'm Noelle King, and December is actually the biggest month of the year for charitable giving. For some people, it's a tax thing, and that's fair. But for many people, it's simply the spirit of this time of year. We come together for parties, we spend time with family and loved ones, we volunteer, we support each other. We spread good cheer. So it's pretty fitting that this Giving Tuesday happens to fall in December, right at the beginning of the month. When you give this Giving Tuesday, you'll generate more of the good vibes that people usually feel this time of year. So make your December count. Here's how to give back to this NPR station and give yourself a warm glow.
You can give now at mainpublic.org. And thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Fostering Maine's Forest Industry in the Face of a Changing World, my guest, Shane O'Neill, Forest Industry Business Development Manager at the University of Maine. Patrick Strock is with the Maine Forest Products Council, and Marina Bowie with BioBased Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Patty Cormier, who is director of the Maine Forest Service. Director Cormier, thanks for giving us a call.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us briefly about the Maine Forest Service. What does the Maine Forest Service do?
Well, if I had the whole hour, I could tell you everything, but I'll whittle it down to a couple of minutes. So with respect to the topic, you know, right now what we're seeing in the forest is the wet is wetter, dry is drier, hot is hotter, and the more frequent occurrences of extreme temperatures and natural disturbance events is making it challenging for landowners and, for that matter, anyone who benefits from our forest to manage or enjoy the forest. So at a fundamental level, one thing the Forest Service does is we have inventory crews that measure 6,000 inventory plots on a rotating basis. So from these plots, we have data to track changes. So Pat was talking about diversifying markets. So now we have data to look at. Do we have the spruce fir? Do we have the hardwood? How much of it do we have? So this data is used by planners, our biometrician, university, and the four main folks that Patrick talked about. So this allows also our foresters at the Forest Service to help guide landowners on how to manage, allows our entomologists and pathologists to educate and respond to invasive insects, and it allows our rangers to assist fire departments and landowners with fire education and suppression efforts, given the changes that we're seeing.
So, Patty, looking at, you're talking about the data that you're able to provide to landowners and industry, and we're talking about how climate change is affecting Maine's forest. Is what you're saying is that how climate change is changing the forest and the types of trees that grow well will change the types of industry in the future?
Well, right. This data is allowing us. We've been taking these, measuring these plots for years and years. So this is just another way that we're tracking. So we're seeing species shifts. So that allows these emerging businesses to diversify or to change with the species, which we're already seeing that with some of the industries, that they're seeing what the changes are, and they're looking at different planting regimes, different thinning regimes. So it's pretty important what this data is showing us.
What are some of the educational resources available from the Forest Service to anyone with questions?
So I'd encourage folks to go on our website at maineforestservice.gov, and we always have updates on our programs. We're part of the Wood Energy Assistance Program, where there's funding for folks to convert to bio-based energy systems. And at any time, folks can call up and get direct assistance from our foresters, entomologists, or rangers. And then, so basically the website is where to connect to that. And it also has information on the Climate Change Council results. And we also have a WoodsWise listserv that people can sign up for, and they would get email alerts.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Patty Cormier, who is the director of the Maine Forest Service. I'm going to go to an email from Chop. He asks, more than a decade ago, the mills said they needed better rail service. Is good rail service still important to the surviving industry? Please speak specifically to the three railroads now serving Maine, Pan Am, which serves Mills at Jay, Rumford, Westbrook, Old Town, and Fairfield, plus maybe Lincoln, New Brunswick Southern and subsidiaries, which serve pulp and paper mills at Madawaska and Woodland, plus Number Mills in northern Maine, Canadian Pacific, which just bought Central Maine and Quebec, which serves the lumber mills in Jackman.
Well, this is a timely subject. We've been working with the rails, and we just did a study that's about to be complete with one of our transportation committees on the Four Main process. And it does look like there could be quicker connection times, but the rail service seems to be improving. We're putting a lot of money, the Maine Department of Transportation and the Federal Department of Transportation have been putting quite a bit of money into our rails so that we can increase the miles per hour and the loading stations along the way for rail service. We've still got a long ways to go in order to be able to get products down into south of Maine, because we have so many different rail lines. There's a lot of connections that need to be made along the way. I think progress is being made, but we're really leaning a lot on trucking right now. That's doing the bulk of our work. But we still see a lot of lumber and finished product from the mills that's moving in that direction. And once it gets south of Maine, it can join the larger networks that begin to move it westward.
We'll go to Alec, who's calling from Chelsea. Hi, Alec. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Well, thank you. So, Jennifer, first, thanks for emphasizing the importance of forests and the forest products industry to Maine. In my view, it can hardly be overstated. So thank you for picking forest-related topics. I work for the New England Forestry Foundation on how forests and forest products can mitigate climate change. And part of that is building with wood. So, for example, it takes 10 times more energy to make a steel stud than it does a wooden one. What I find is that people generally embrace increasing the number and stocking of trees in our forests to mitigate climate change, but many are not on board with harvesting trees. Particularly, I run into this because I work New England-wide in southern New England. And that most folks are largely unaware that using wood rather than other materials reduces emissions. So my question for your panelists is there a plan to increase public understanding of the fact that choosing wood from sustainably managed forests is the environmentally responsible decision if you care about climate, and build support for active management of our forests?
Thanks for your call, Alex. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most interesting stories that Alec brought up. We are in an opportunity, really, we're a green industry, and that we have the opportunity to sequester emissions and to sink carbon in the wood that we make. If we look at the forests of Maine, there are estimates that half of the emissions that we generate are offset by the carbon that we store in trees. Trees take in carbon dioxide and sequester the carbon, and then oxygen is emitted. So it's a real nice natural kind of cycle that takes place. And to the extent that we can actively manage our forests and move into carbon into products like homes and like the new kind of structures with cross-laminated timber we talked about, those are all part of an effective strategy to mitigate against carbon. So our plans are to, we've got a communications budget to put together and messaging that we'll be working on to make sure people understand this whole idea of the forest economy in Maine and what kind of positive contribution it can make to the climate mitigation that we're all facing right now.
Shane? Sorry. You thought you were done, Patrick.
No, I'm all set.
Okay.
No, I definitely agree with what Patrick said is, you know, there's education to the general public on what this is and what it can do. The university works on that through our outreach programs and overall education. So just as we teach our students you know, the different aspects of forest and forest management is to be able to deliver that message to the public as well. And so, as Pat mentioned, with the cross-laminated timber, where you're able to offset the non-renewable resource of, say, steel and concrete, which is, you know, there's only so much of this in the earth. At some point, it's going to run out. Whereas, as wood is renewable and regenerates, so you'll have something that continues on into the future, and you're not pulling resources from the environment, but rather just continuing to reuse it.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to note that any forestry practice, any forestry operation that's successful long term has been, the forests have been sustainably harvested. If it hadn't, then there wouldn't be any wood left to use. So that's a really important consideration. And this group and BioBased Maine always looks to find all value-added products that can be made from wood. So one tree harvested can be used to make lumber primarily, and then the residuals that we make so much of in our forest industry operations can be used to make the renewable chemicals and other high-value materials that are they're alternatives to petroleum-based products. So not only are we using the wood in all of its value, but we're also offsetting petroleum-based products and making more renewable materials.
Alec, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Torbert, who's calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Jennifer and guest. I really appreciate your emphasis with your guest on the value-added aspect and sustainability of our forests. But my concern is that the European Union has a 20% renewable mandate for its energy portfolio, and in and amongst that 20% is counted biomass. And this has led to a mass quantity of export of wood chips from the southeastern United States and the devastation of the forest down there. There are hundreds of freestanding biomass boilers in America and thousands around the world. And the part of greenwashing is that these have been sold as a renewable and sustainable energy source, and they're anything but. I fear that Searsport in Maine may be used as a export terminal for wood chips to Europe. Well, what can your guests tell us about that, and how can we prevent this from happening?
All right, so we haven't really talked much about biomass and wood chips at this point.
Yeah, one of the markets we lost, Maine made a decision in the 80s to get in the biomass energy production business. And we supported standalone biomass energy plants to take the residual trees from our forests. So I can only speak about the Maine experience. But when we take the tops and the unmerchantable wood that couldn't go into pulpwood, and put it into a use like biomass, once we pulled the tree out and taken all its components, we have this scrubby stuff left, and we put that into biomass traditionally. And that's actually produced at one time, and not too long ago, about 20% of Maine's electricity production came from that. And in our pulp mills, we burn waste wood and bark and sawdust from our sawmills is burned in really efficient combined heat and power facilities in our sawmills. So we think that to date we've had a good use and a good history of using wood as an energy source. But we know we're moving into other areas where we can find other uses for those residuals, and that's the long-term gain.
But and combined, several biomass plants in Maine have closed.
They have. The economics are tough when you look at low oil prices and low natural gas prices. But it's an investment when you look at all the jobs it creates and the residuals that it uses. It's been a good fit for Maine. I don't know if the markets for export of Maine biomass wood will actually work. We have a strong pulp and paper industry, so a lot of the wood in the South that's been shipped to Europe was a result of loss of markets. And as long as we can maintain markets for pulp and lower grade materials in Maine, I think we can use it. But biomass energy, moving towards combined heat and power, where you both take advantage of the electricity you can make and the thermal load that you can generate. You can use the heat to dry wood or to cook pulp so that it can be made into paper. When you find those kinds of combinations, those are win-wins for Maine.
We are going to take another quick break. We're talking about the future of Maine's forest products industry. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, Curiosity for Life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through 8th grade. BreakwaterLearning.org. Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, with expanded services in Augusta, including pediatric care and telehealth. More at androscoggin.org. And the Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, joining the Freemasons in Maine in wishing everyone a happy holiday season.
There's little question that capitalism has produced negative effects, but at the same time, it has created immense wealth.
What I want to argue is not just that capitalism is all chubby babies and iPhones and expanding life expectancies, it is also a morally better system.
Digging into the pros and cons of capitalism, next time on Intelligence Squared US.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock.
On the next Fresh Air, actor David Harbour from the Netflix series Stranger Things. He plays the skeptical police chief of a sleepy town besieged by supernatural events.
I know the worst thing that's ever happened here was when an owl attacked Eleanor Gillespie's head because it thought that her hair was a nest.
And we remember New Yorker cartoonist Gayon Wilson, who died recently. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what's happening with Maine's forest products industry? My guests are Shane O'Neill, Forest Industry Business Development Manager at the University of Maine, Marina Bowie, who is Executive Director of Bio-Based Maine, and Patrick Strauch, Executive Director of the Maine Forest Products Council. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Nick. He says, I'm sure everyone wants to create a big market, but big markets often lead to commodity-like prices. Most high-valued woods, mahogany, rosewood, etc., are tropical. Are there any woods that could be grown in Maine that would command premium prices?
Well, we have a hardwood flooring market that's can be fickle. If you want oak, you have to look towards southern Maine to get that species. But sugar maple is prevalent throughout the state, and yellow birch can at times be in demand. But we don't have cherry. Cherry is going to be closer to southern Maine. We're in its northern range. So the species we have that we put into higher value products are white pine. That's a really high quality species that we use, and spruce. It's mixed with spruce and with balsam fir for a lot of the 2x4s that are made, but the bigger, larger structural components made with spruce are very strong and important for the state of Maine. And we've learned not to rule out species. There was a time when aspen was not a very popular tree, and we didn't really want to grow it, but we're seeing that show up in lumber yards. So Maine has a use for just about every species and can adapt, but we don't have mahogany up this way.
Shane, you wanted to jump in?
Sure. There are some opportunities using technologies to create value-added solid wood products. One of the technologies out there is called thermally modified wood, which you can take a more commodity species of wood, such as a spruce or a pine or fir, and thermally modify it so that it has more outdoor weathering performance, so that it would perform more like a teak or a mahogany. And so that would give you value add to what we already have in the state, but then not put you into that commodity market.
So that might be something used for decking or something on
Correct.
A high end.
Siding, exactly.
All right. We'll go to David, who's calling from Bartlett, New Hampshire. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask your guests about the potential for a different kind of forest product, which is forest carbon. Carbon offset markets can pay landowners to maintain or increase the carbon storage on their properties. To date, some landowners have taken advantage of those markets, primarily NGO landowners, but also some commercial landowners. And I'm wondering, I'd like to get their perspective on what they see as the potential of that market for helping the bottom line of forest landowners.
Thanks for your question, David.
Well, I can speak from the Forest Products Council. We have about 8.5 million acres of dues-paying members, mostly the commercial forest land. And we have some members that are considering it and moving forward with it. It's a market that's defined right now by the California standards, carbon market, and it requires commitments for 100 years. And to some landowners, that's an impediment to think about maintaining stocking levels for 100 years when we don't know how we would deal with fire or catastrophic situations like the spruce budworm coming back and decimating the spruce fir forest. So there's a lot of questions, a lot of investigation. We're seeing markets coming on board that look like they might be shorter term. So we'll stay tuned and see how that pans out. But I would say that the UN International Panel on Climate Change recently ruled that in the long run, a sustainable forest management strategy aimed at maintaining or increasing forest carbon stocks while producing a sustained yield of timber, fiber, and energy from the forest will generate the largest sustained mitigation benefit. Some of my landowners aren't interested in the carbon market, but they're very interested in their growing stock and increasing it, and in exchange, the state benefits from that kind of growth.
David, thanks so much for your call. And I'm so interested in how the conversation is so different than it used to be, isn't it, Patrick? I've got a question, an email from Marty, and this is for you, Marina. Which of the new forest-based technologies is the most surprising, a product you would never guess could be made out of wood or cellulose?
Oh, that's a great question. Let's see. I mentioned one earlier. You can make protein from wood. So I won't pretend to know the chemistry behind that process, but you can basically extract the sugars from wood and feed them to a microbe that creates a protein. And ultimately, that protein can be put in food or feed. So there's huge potential in Maine to make fish feed from wood for these growing aquaculture farms. And that's a really exciting opportunity to kind of create a circular economy. The food comes from Maine's forest and is fed to Maine fish and feeds Maine people.
I'm going to throw the question to you, Shane, even though Marty didn't ask it to you. What's the most surprising product you've seen?
Well, some of the textiles you can right now on the market buy shoes that are made out of wood, not like, you know, traditional Dutch shoes, but actual footwear.
What is the product called? I mean, I know that rayon is made out of wood fiber. So if you're buying shoes, what do they call the material is in the shoe?
Well, there's different. You can have like a canvas like product that is actually made from wood based materials. But then also the soles, which are like an elastomeric rubber, can be made from wood-based biochemicals. So, you know, the whole regular footwear can be generated from our forest. So you show that to people and it's just mind-boggling. You know, there's researchers in Europe who are working on making transparent wood so that they can use it as windows. So your whole wall would be wood, and there's no glass in it.
One of the props we use when we do our circuit of traveling around the state talking about the new forest products industry is we bring a water bottle, because we know the labels on that water bottle are made from paper from Maine mills. We know the water comes from our forest environment, and we think the future is that the clear plastic bottle that the water comes in will be made from trees as well. So that's a kind of a prop for the future, or an idea we have about what the future looks like.
We'll go to Claire calling from Gardner. Hi, Claire. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great show, too, by the way. Someone asked a question about the emissions from burning wood a little while ago, and I didn't really hear an answer for that. But burning wood is almost as bad as burning coal. It's for in terms of global warming, trees are much better standing and collecting carbon from the air and left alone than burning, because all the carbon they collect goes right back in the air when you burn it. Not to mention that burning wood produces a lot of particulate and hydrocarbons and a lot of other stuff that's better off not to be in the air. So burning wood is not what we want to be doing in terms of doing anything for global warming.
Claire, thanks for your call.
Well, I think you're looking at a debate here. The goal really is to look at burning wood as a biogenic source of fuel. And I talked about how we're moving more towards combined heat and power. But the emissions from wood are similar to other emissions from other materials, but they are also cycled back into the environment and part of a biogenic cycle. So that if you think about the cycle of wood that's been burning, and we've been doing this in Maine for many years, it's in carbon balance. And we talk about wood as being carbon neutral in that regard. There's not much debate about the mill residuals being used as a source of energy production and heat production. And you have a lot of institutions in Maine that have converted over to pellets and wood using very sophisticated emissions controls. And it is definitely something that's recognized worldwide as a really important opportunity. And it's important in Maine as well.
Claire, thanks for your call. We'll go to Beatty, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Beatty. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have several points. I know this is about forest products, but I really feel the enormous value of the forest is this watershed protection of having these extreme downpours absorbed and then stored the water so it comes out over the year when in the drier seasons, and also it keeps the snow on the ground. And with the same result, the snow gradually melts. It's sort of like the glaciers. Another point is no chip and ship. I just think we really need to keep the tops of the trees in the forest for the health of the forest floor, being able to absorb moisture and hold it, and also the nutrients that need to go back in, taking the treetops just...
So, Beatty, we're short on time. So are you saying that you don't believe that we ought to be harvesting trees at all, or you just don't want to see...
No, I think you can. I think you just have to make sure that the balance of nutrients going in and the quality of the forest floor, the microbes, all the creatures that live there and make it porous and holding. There's one more thing is... nobody mentioned black locust. That doesn't rot. Nobody seems to use it anymore.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Well, part of the researchers' focus at the University of Maine is on soil conditions and forest health. And so they're always looking at best management practices and that balance that she had mentioned. You know, you want to have a healthy forest. And so, you know, the right amounts of nitrogen and carbon and aeration in the soil and microbes and nutrient performance, it all ties together. And so that is definitely part of the best management practices that are focused on in the state, you know, and setbacks from waterways as well, so that you mitigate erosion and some of these same issues that she spoke of. So these are in play. It's just not necessarily emphasized or spoken of, I guess I'd say.
I would say we also have a lot of different kinds of harvests that we do, and some of the relationship with Scandinavian countries is brought over equipment that actually cuts a tree and processes it into lengths in the woods, and we kind of build a floating mat of tops and limbs so that those stay in the forest and create an extended season. If soil conditions get kind of muddy, you can travel on these roads. Another machine goes in and puts the wood on its piggyback and hauls it out. So those cut-the-length systems operate as well. But we've done a lot of research through the university and understand this nutrient cycling quite a bit. And in some cases, it's perfectly fine to leave tops and limbs in the forest. And in other cases, it really doesn't do that much harm to pull it out, given the harvesting systems that we have.
Marina, before we wrap up this hour, I want to talk to you about, we've talked about the big ambitions for the forest products industry and the new strategies to increase the number of kind of products. But, there are some barriers. One is finding enough people to work in the industry. What are some of the other barriers?
Yeah, so Maine has a huge opportunity to capture a market share of this bioeconomy, so this plant-based materials economy, which is growing stronger each day. It's a $2.7 trillion global sector, and it's as big as France and growing as fast as China. But one of the things that stands in our way is Maine's ability to capture renewable energy credits, or RIN credits, under the EPA-administered renewable fuel standard. So because Maine trees are not plantation grown, they're sustainably harvested and naturally regenerating, we unfortunately don't get to take advantage of those RIN credits. And that actually inhibits companies like biofuel companies from coming to Maine and
so is our investing. Congressional delegation working on fixing that?
Yes. So this BioBase Maine and this For Maine effort and our congressional delegation is helping, and we're in the process of solving that issue.
All right.
And the governor's helping as well
with
some of these efforts.
Well, also interesting, thank you all for being here on this snowy day and coming into our studio to talk about the future of the forest products industry. The voices you just heard, Marina Bowie, who is Executive Director of BioBased Maine, and Patrick Strauch, Executive Director of the Maine Forest Products Council. Also here with us, Shane O'Neill, Forest Industry Business Development Manager with the University of Maine. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as all sorts of links that have been mentioned on the program, at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.